Eddie, the Collegiate Junior. Chapter 7. Summer Break, Part 1. Early one Monday morning, Mark drives down to Angelo's service station with a bulldozer equipped with a backhoe on a trailer. Eddie comes out to greet Mark, who asks Eddie, "After I knock the house down, what do you want me to do with the lot?" Eddie explains to Mark, "Level out the lot and grade it toward the road. But be careful of the water and sewer lines. I want to build a storage building where the house is." Mark replies, "Got it." Mark looks around and tells Eddie, "Oh, good. My dumpster is already here." Eddie has purchased the property behind the service station. Mark will be knocking down the house and grading the lot to Eddie's specifications. Once Mark is finished with the lot, he will build a 4,000-square-foot climate-controlled storage building and an 8-foot-high brick wall around the property. Once the project nears completion, Mark, Eddie, and his brother, John, will take care of the landscaping. Eddie wants the storage building finished before the Olympics start, if only so the tribe can watch the games together. Eddie's ultimate goal, however, is to get this project completed before the beginning of track practice this upcoming autumn. And Mark has another similar project going on. He is building two large storage buildings, one on each side of the storage yards on 2nd Street. In a few days, when Mark is finished preparing Eddie's lot, Mark will head over to the middle school and rip up the lopsided track in preparation for its conversion to the metric standard. By the time Mark finishes his work at the middle school, the footing and slab for Eddie's storage building will be fully cured, and Mark can begin building the concrete structure. For the wall around the lot behind the service station, Mark will hire the same contractors he used to build the wall around Alastair Crumb's family compound. While Mark is out back working on the lot, Officer Richard Hayes drives into the service station, asking Eddie, "Do you have a moment?" Eddie replies, "Sure. What's up?" Eddie knows beyond a shadow of a doubt that whatever Officer Hayes wants is a serious issue, for Officer Hayes usually greets Eddie by announcing, "What's up?" Officer Hayes walks up, telling Eddie, "This Brad Evans character has filed a complaint against you. He claims you assaulted him." Now knowing exactly what this is about, Eddie tells Officer Hayes, "Wow. I have to hear this one. Let's go have a seat in the office." Eddie and Richard take a seat, and Eddie asks, "What did I do this time?" Reading a copy of the official complaint, Richard replies, "Brad Evans alleges that, on the 14th of this month, at about 12:30, you threw him into the ocean, and you and Kathy assaulted him down at the beach. Evans claims he has 5 witnesses. The witnesses are reported to be the Centerville distance team, who were running on the beach with Evans." Eddie replies, "Really? I'm always here at lunch. I wonder how I got to the beach." Eddie peruses the calendar sitting on the desk and tells Richard, "Take a look at this." Eddie points out to Richard, "I remember that day. I was sitting here eating lunch, and you came into the station. You told me that Goldshit was out of the hospital, so I wrote it down on the calendar. And that was a Wednesday. Kathy was in class." Looking at the calendar, Richard nods his head and replies, "I see that. I remember that now." Richard radios the station, 315 to radio. The dispatch officer replies, "Radio to 315. Go ahead." Richard asks, "Please check and see if I was 10-7 at Angelo's service station on May 14th. The dispatcher replies, "10-4. Eddie tells Richard, "I'm no expert, but Evans seems to be involved in something illegal. He apparently wants me out of the way, just like McCrutchen did." Reviewing the official complaint, Richard thrusts his finger into the paper, stating, "May 14th. 12:30 p.m. That's when this Evans character said you and Kathy assaulted him. This doesn't make any sense." Eddie replies, "That's because there is no sense in anything those guys do. I was here. You were here. And Kathy was in class all week. She was at the university. And they take attendance. I'm sure they can vouch for her. The dispatcher radios Richard, radio to 315. Richard replies, 315. Go ahead. The dispatcher informs Richard, May 14th, records show you were 10-7 at Angelo's at 12:13. 10-8 at 12:48. Richard replies, 10-4. Richard confirms, you were right. I was here for what it looks like about a half hour on the 14th, at the time of the alleged assault. Eddie tells Richard, there could be another explanation. Richard asks, what's that? Eddie explains, I'm one of the fastest men in the world. You could have turned around, and I could have ran 11 miles to the beach, assaulted Evans, and run back. Richard laughs and replies, you couldn't have driven there and back in that time. And even if you did drive to the beach, how would you know Evans was there? Eddie tells Richard, well, maybe it was someone who looks like me. Or maybe I used my time machine that the chucker claims I have. Richard laughs, replying, a time machine. Yeah, that would explain everything. Eddie smiles and tells Richard, look, I was here all week. I have the service tickets to prove it. And you can question the customers. Kathy was in school all week. They have the attendance records to prove it. Richard makes a few notes, concluding his investigation. Richard tells Eddie, now, I'm wondering what these characters will dream up next. Eddie laughs and replies, I can only imagine. Eddie then suddenly puts his finger in the air, shaking it back and forth as his grandmother often did when words of wisdom were about to be orated, and tells Richard, hey, wait a second. If Evans was on the beach at 12:30, his five witnesses should have been in school. What were they doing at the beach? Richard raises his eyebrows and replies, that's a good point. I tell you, this stuff gets deeper and deeper every time you turn a corner. Richard tells Eddie, well, let me get back on the road. Richard gets back on patrol, and Eddie goes back to check on Mark's progress. While Eddie is at work one Saturday morning, Kathy is outside, straightening up the pool area, getting it ready for summer. Looking toward the driveway, Kathy sees her counterpart riding her bicycle up the driveway. With three universes, and the ability to travel to the past, present, and future, Kathy wonders which of her counterparts is riding up the driveway today. Kathy's counterpart yells out, oh, good. You're here. Seeing her counterpart wearing a blue shirt, Kathy asks, are you coming from the blue universe? Kathy's counterpart replies, yeah. And I have some great news. Opening the gate to the pool to let her counterpart into the pool area, Kathy asks, what's the good news? Kathy's counterpart exclaims, me and Eddie bought this house. This house came up for sale in our universe, and using the money we made from gold and the stock market, we were able to buy the house. But we're still living at Lena's parents' house until we get our house fixed up the way we want it. Kathy gives her counterpart a high five and exclaims, awesome. Kathy tells her counterpart, in your universe, there's probably a 3-acre lot for sale on Orchard Lane. It has a gravel driveway, and about 1 acre already cleared where someone was going to build a house. In my universe, Mark and Paula live there and built their own house. Mark and Paula, in your universe, should definitely look into it. Kathy's counterpart energetically replies, I'll have to tell them about it. It would be really great having them live nearby. Remembering that, in the blue universe, Mark and Paula live down the street from Lena's parents on Ivy Avenue, Kathy tells her counterpart, you guys live really close to each other now. Kathy's counterpart explains, yeah. But before you guys told us about how to make money through the portal, we all worked long hours. We never really got a chance to do much together. But now we do. Kathy's counterpart asks Kathy, so, what's up in your universe? Kathy explains, well, Eddie is about to buy the service station from Angelo. Kathy's counterpart exclaims, what? Are you serious? Kathy explains, yeah. Angelo is moving back to Greece. Angelo is going to buy a service station close to the town where he grew up. He still has a lot of family there. Kathy's counterpart asks, how did all this come about? Kathy explains, over the years, Eddie gave Angelo a lot of stock tips. So, Angelo invested a lot of money and made a whole lot more. The last I heard, Angelo made like $3 or $4 million. Kathy's counterpart exclaims, wow. I'll definitely have to let my Eddie know. He'd really love to own the service station someday. Kathy's counterpart asks, what else is going on in your universe? Kathy replies, you may not believe this, but Eddie broke the world record in the 100 meter dash, and Eddie, Mark, Johnson, and Braden broke the world record in the 4x400 meter relay. Oh? And Braden broke the world record in the 400 meter dash. Kathy's counterpart exclaims, asking, seriously? He did? Seeing Kathy's expression, her counterpart exclaims, you're serious? Aren't you? Kathy replies, yeah. Totally. Kathy's counterpart explains, in my universe, Eddie is working on the house we just bought, and Mark is helping him. Eddie still works out at a gym that just opened up a mile from where we live. He has a little more time now that he cut down his hours at Angelo's. Mark joins him a lot, and they work out together. Kathy asks, in your universe, did Dr. Akinmola start to build the church yet? Kathy's counterpart explains, yeah. Eddie's father, Mark's father, and Mark are working on it now. And I head over there to help with whatever I can. Kathy smiles and tells her counterpart, it sounds like the events in your universe are now really similar to mine, with a slight time delay. Out of the blue, Kathy's counterpart yells out, oh. And guess what? Bobby B. came home for a visit and is going to be working on the church project too. And Erica graduated from the police academy, and those two are back together again. Kathy exclaims, wow. Who knows? Maybe the whole group will get back together in your universe someday. Kathy's counterpart sighs and replies, that would be so nice. I really miss everyone. With sudden great excitement, Kathy tells her counterpart, oh. And I got a job. I'm going to be teaching gym at the elementary school behind my parents' house. And Paula is going to be teaching gym and health class at the middle school. Kathy's counterpart exclaims, really? That's awesome. Kathy explains to her counterpart, Mr. Zunday said Miss Parteno is getting married, and so she's moving away. And Mr. Coleman has taken a position somewhere else. Kathy then tells her counterpart, you should go down and talk to Mr. Zunday before school lets out. All this came about suddenly, so there may be a position open in your universe too. Kathy's counterpart replies, I'm going to do that. I always wanted to be a gym teacher. With Kathy, wanting to be a gym teacher is, at least, very consistent among the three universes. Kathy and her counterpart share other stories about their respective universes and their experience in the red universe. Kathy shows her counterpart the marble portal Mark and Eddie installed behind the jasmine wall. Neither Kathy nor her counterpart has found any differently colored stones, so, at the present time, the parallel universe count remains at three, which are the yellow, blue, and red universes. Kathy's counterpart heads back to her universe with a few more ideas about what to do around their new house. About a month later, late on a Friday afternoon, Eddie, Kathy, and Angelo meet at the office of Davies and Rice, LLP, to finalize the sale of Angelo's service station. They are joined by Ralph Miles, who will be Eddie's accountant. Eddie always knew that this day would come someday. Today, Eddie's dream of owning his own service station has become a reality. While they are waiting, Angelo tells Eddie, I'm really glad you wanted to buy the station. But I have to be honest with you. I really hate to leave you alone here on your own, but I can't wait to get back to Greece. Eddie replies, Don't worry about me. I'll be fine. Angelo tells Eddie, I know you will. I knew, from the moment I met you, that you'd be a mechanic someday. Eddie knew that too. For as long as he can remember, Eddie knew he wanted to be a mechanic. Kathy points out, It sounds like to me that both of you are having your dreams come true. Kathy asks Angelo, Did your deal in Greece go through yet? Angelo replies, Not quite yet. But everything is all ready to go. I'll be flying back to Greece in a few days, and I'll take care of buying the station. Then, I'll fly back and we'll pack up and move back there. We got to be out of our house by mid-July. Kathy tells Angelo, It sounds like you have it all planned out. Angelo replies, This is going a lot easier than I ever expected. That is because Angelo, taking Eddie's advice, has made almost $4 million in the stock market. Angelo is paying for the service station in Greece with cash. And when Angelo finds a house in Greece, he'll be paying cash for that too. Mr. Davies calls the group into the conference room where he will briefly discuss the contract, transfer the funds, and answer any questions. As Mr. Davies distributes copies of the paperwork for the real estate transaction, Ralph is the sole person who reads every line, wanting to understand all the details of the deal. Mr. Davies explains that Eddie is purchasing the property on which the service station stands and the building with cash. The tools and everything else not associated with the actual property will be a separate transaction. Once the paperwork for the sale of the service station property and building have been executed, Eddie hands over the certified check for its sale. The focus of the meeting now moves on to the sale of the tools and other related items. Mr. Davies distributes the paperwork and, again, Ralph carefully reads every line. Included in the second sale are the tools, the items in the machine shop, the wheel alignment equipment, and everything else that can be physically moved out of the service station. The list of equipment is itemized on an invoice, explicitly indicating what is included in the sale and how much Eddie is paying for each item. Once Mr. Davies finishes his brief discussion of the deal, Ralph asks, May I ask a question regarding this transaction? Mr. Davies replies, Sure. What is your question? Ralph asks, Am I correct in understanding that all of the equipment is being sold for just under $4,000? Mr. Davies explains, Yes and no. Eddie is purchasing the equipment with $20 double eagle gold coins. Each coin is valued at about $600 a piece at the current price of gold. The total value of the coins approximates the actual value of the equipment. But, since each coin is stamped by the government to be valued at $20, Eddie and Angelo have come to an agreement to sell the equipment at a discount, technically speaking, of course. Wanting to understand the logic behind the transaction, Ralph asks, What is the advantage in doing this? Mr. Davies explains, First, equipment purchased at the prices indicated on the invoice cannot be construed to be subject to an ad valorem tax. That will save Eddie a lot of money every year. Secondly, on paper, it looks like Angelo is taking a severe loss, which will help with his taxes. And thirdly, Eddie, not the corporation, is purchasing the equipment. The service station will then lease the equipment from Eddie. Rental income is not subject to Social Security taxes. Eddie can lease the equipment from himself for any dollar amount he chooses, so long as it is within reason. The downside is the equipment cannot be depreciated on Eddie's tax returns, but, in the long run, Eddie will gain a distinct advantage. Ralph replies, I can't say I've ever seen a transaction like this before. Mr. Davies wants to tell Ralph that he hasn't seen anything yet, but rather explains, You'll find out that, occasionally, transactions are executed in very creative and esoteric ways. Once the paperwork regarding the sale of the equipment is completed, Eddie places a small ammunition can containing the gold on the table. Opening the box, Eddie removes the gold, where Angelo, Mr. Davies, and Eddie count and verify the amount of gold. Never seeing so much gold in one place, Ralph examines one of the coins, seeing that the coin is, in fact, stamped with its face value of $20. Ralph concludes that Eddie's transaction, purchasing the equipment with gold, is perfectly legal, especially since the $20 gold pieces are still technically legal tender. When the transactions are complete, Eddie tells Angelo, "Don't forget to sell the gold in September, near the first day of fall, when it will briefly jump above $700 an ounce. Don't hold on to it, thinking that it will go up more, because it won't." Angelo tells Eddie, "You haven't been wrong yet. Trust me. I'll sell it when you tell me." Eddie tells Angelo, "And when you get to Greece, let me know your address and phone number, so I can keep sending you my stock information." Angelo replies, "You got it." Reminiscing a bit, Angelo tells Eddie, "Kathy, Ralph, and Mr. Davies, I remember when I found the property for the service station. There was an old beat-up house on the lot. It was for sale, so I bought it. Then, the day after the closing, I went over to the property and stood in the front yard for an hour, wondering what to do next. I really didn't know where to begin. I remember that day well. It was very cold outside and snowing." Angelo then tells Eddie, "Your father pulled off the road and asked me if I needed some help. He said he saw me standing there when he was on his way to pick up a pizza, and on his way home, I was still standing on the corner. So, I told him I just bought the property, and I was going to knock down the house and put up a service station." Kathy exclaims, "Oh, really? So Eddie has been eating pizza for a really, really long time." Angelo laughs and replies, "Eddie must have been about 8 or 9 years old at the time." Angelo continues, "When we were talking, I mentioned that I need to find someone to do the construction. Eddie's father told me that he could handle the project. He gave me his card, so I called him the next day. I was working for Jake, across town, at the time. Whenever I wasn't working over at the shop, I would come over and help Eddie's father with the project, doing whatever I can. The building turned out really nice, especially the brickwork." With the transaction complete, and another client arriving soon, Mr. Davies excuses himself to get Eddie and Angelo's paperwork filed. On their way out, the rest of the group stops in the lobby, continuing their conversation. Angelo then asks Eddie, "So, what are your plans for the station?" Eddie explains, "First, I'll finish up all the work that's going on. Then, I think I'll close down the station for a week or two and clean up around the shop. But I think I'll wait to do that until after the Olympics. I really want to watch the games with the guys." Angelo replies, "The station can really use a little straightening up. I never bothered doing that because I know exactly where everything is." Eddie explains, "If I take the time to straighten the place up, I'll know everything that's there." Angelo replies, "Good. Because I don't even know everything that's there. Who knows what you'll find?" Eddie replies, "Probably a few old Johnson rods." Angelo and Eddie laugh, both knowing that Angelo will be selling a few Johnson rods when he gets to Greece. As everyone heads out, Kathy tells Eddie, "Congratulations. You have your very own service station." Eddie tells Kathy, "In a way, this is almost better than winning a race." Kathy replies, "Yeah. I can see that. A race is for the moment. Owning a service station is for a very long time." Angelo shakes Eddie's hand, telling him, "Thank you for everything. We'll catch up again before I leave." Eddie replies, "Thank you. And by the way, my squat rack is still holding up." Eddie and Kathy head to the pizzeria to celebrate. Angelo heads to his house, passing by the service station on his way. And Ralph heads out, wondering what in the world just happened in Mr. Davis' conference room. The next week, Eddie heads off to work at his service station. When Eddie drives up, Mark, who is constructing the storage building on the land behind the service station, yells out to Eddie, "Hey, I'm glad you can show up to work today." Eddie replies, "Yeah, bro. I have to start cleaning up around here." Eddie walks behind the service station with Mark to check on the progress of the construction. Mark tells Eddie, "I'm almost done." Eddie replies, "I see that. It's looking good, bro." Mark elaborates on the progress, telling Eddie, "The guys should have the wall done by the end of the week. The emergency generator for the station is working. The sprinkler system is working. I'll have the topsoil spread by the end of the day. Bobby B will be here soon to help me do that. Then, we can start putting down the sod. Everything should be done by the time the Olympics start." Looking around, Eddie replies, "Awesome." Changing the subject, Eddie tells Mark, "With Angelo gone, I need to find a mechanic. I need someone to change oil, pump gas, and that sort of thing." Mark asks, "How many hours are you going to work now?" Eddie explains, "After I get this place cleaned up, maybe 20 hours a week. If I can get someone here part-time, everything will go a little smoother." Mark suggests, "Why don't you hire Nacla Brocklin?" Eddie laughs and replies, "He'll torch the place if someone mispronounces his name." Mark laughs and tells Eddie, "Well, there's always the Chucky." Eddie laughs and replies, "Yeah, right. The Chucky. I should have thought about that myself." Mark tells Eddie, "Actually, Bobby B might be interested. When Paula starts working at the middle school, I'm going to be cutting my hours down and working the hours that she's working. I want to get home and get cleaned up by the time Paula gets home, so we can do stuff together after work." Eddie replies, "That's a good idea, bro. I think I'll do the same." Mark adds, "And on all those school holidays, I'm not working." Mark just gave Eddie some food for thought. Bobby B then drives up and goes to work with Mark spreading the topsoil. Eddie walks to the front of the service station, where Officer Richard Hayes is just driving up. Eddie yells out to the officer, "What's up?" Richard replies, "What's up?" Eddie explains, "I bought the service station from Angelo. He's moving back to Greece." Richard responds, "He's been talking about that on and off for about 2 years now. He said you were going to buy it. So, he actually went through with it." Eddie replies, "Yeah. It all happened pretty quickly." Officer Hayes asks Eddie, "Did you hear that crash down the street a while ago?" Eddie replies, "No. I must have been busy." Officer Hayes explains, "You really got to hear this one. Get this. A long dump truck was driving down the road and lost one of the rear wheels. Fortunately, there are 8 wheels in the rear. So, the wheel bounces down the street and hits a car coming in the other direction, damaging the front end and breaking the windshield. The car then hits the power pole." Eddie asks, "Is the guy all right?" Officer Hayes replies, "I think so. He sideswiped the pole. Fortunately, he didn't hit the pole head-on." Officer Hayes continues, "The dump truck driver then stops and goes over to help this character who hit the pole." Explaining what happened at the accident site, Officer Hayes continues, "Then, I arrive at the scene and start sorting all this out. This character driving the car stated the wheel was bouncing down the street, and he tried to avoid it, but there was no way to avoid the collision. So, the wheel hits this character's car, breaks the windshield, and then the car hits the power pole. Pretty cut and dry, right?" Eddie replies, "Yeah. Sounds like it." Officer Hayes continues, "Now, follow me here. This character driving the dump truck claims the wheel that hit the car is not his wheel. So, we have a dump truck with a missing wheel, a wheel laying on the ground that matches the other wheels on his dump truck, and this character is claiming that it's not his wheel." Eddie laughs and exclaims, "You've got to be kidding me. Officer Hayes replies, "I wish I was." Then, this dump truck character tells me that the wheel was someone else's wheel, and that wheels fall off trucks all the time. So, I asked him why he stopped. His answer was that he saw a motorist in need. Eddie laughs and mentions, "The last time I checked, wheels just don't fall off trucks." Officer Hayes replies, "You know that. I know that. But I'm telling you. You just can't even begin to make this stuff up." After catching up on a few other things, Richard asks Eddie, "Hey, what do you know about this Mayor Bradford Jameson character?" Eddie explains, "As far as I know, nobody likes the guy. For some reason, he always shows up at our track meets. At the divisional meet, we saw him with Brad Evans and McCrutchen. And he occasionally shows up at Dr. Akinmola's church. When he does, he looks around, paying more attention to who is there rather than the service." Eddie asks, "So, what's up with the mayor?" Richard explains, "I'm not 100% sure. But I do know this. The more I look around, the more I see some sort of illegal activity and fraud. The guy lives in a house that suggests he's a brain surgeon or something. And I've had a few complaints about how City Hall is being run over there. He's definitely up to something. I just can't put my finger on it." Eddie offers, "I'll keep my eyes open. If I find out anything, I'll definitely let you know." Richard replies, "Thank you. I'm going to need some help with this one. It's not like I can just ask this character, 'Hey, what kind of criminal activity are you involved in?' and expect a confession." Eddie laughs and replies, "If it was that easy, you can just tell all the criminals to report to jail, and they'd show up with a list of their crimes." Richard then gets back on the road, and Eddie starts his day. Mid-July marks the beginning of the Summer Olympics. Eddie, Kathy, Mark, and Paula have planned a 2-week-long party where the track team and their friends can come over and watch the games. The party will alternate between Eddie and Kathy's house and Mark and Paula's house. Everyone on the track team is invited and can watch the events on television or hang out at the pool. On the day of the 100-meter dash final, the party is held at Eddie and Kathy's home. The catering van from the pizzeria drives up, meaning lunch has arrived. Kathy, Eddie, and Paula head to the door to help Arianna with the pizza. Each of them grab a few boxes of pizza, bringing them inside, as Arianna brings in the salad and breadsticks. Kathy tells Eddie, "Wow. I think we'll have enough for dinner too." Eddie replies, "Yeah, for you. For everyone else, we have steak, potato skins, and veggies for dinner." Overhearing Eddie and Kathy's conversation is Angela Meadows, from the radio station, who mentions, "All you guys really love pizza." Kathy replies, "Yeah. It has all the food groups." Paula laughs, exclaiming, "Exactly. Pizza is the base of Kathy's food pyramid." Kathy laughs and replies, "It is not." Paula counters, telling everyone, "Oh, yes it is, girl. On the base of Kathy's food pyramid is a 16-inch pizza. On top of that is a 14-inch pizza. And on top of that is a 10-inch pizza. And on top of that is an 8-inch pizza with a pot of chocolate mousse on the very top." Everyone around laughs hysterically, prompting Kathy to add, "Hey now. You left out the breadsticks and garlic butter." During the party, Angelo drives up with his wife and 2 kids and joins the group. Ready to move back to Greece, Angelo stops by to say goodbye to Eddie and Kathy. Eddie introduces Angelo and his family to everyone, many of who have not met Angelo before. Angelo greets everyone and takes a seat by the poolside with Eddie. Kathy brings out a few plates, and Angelo's family indulges in a few slices of pizza and salad. Over lunch, Angelo tells Eddie, "You got a really big party going on here." Eddie explains, "Yeah. Most of the people here are from the track team. We're all watching the Olympics together. Well, at least when the track events are on. Most of the time, everyone is out here at the pool or downstairs in the gym working out. Tomorrow, we'll continue the party at Mark's house. Angelo asks, "Where does Mark live?" Eddie replies, "He lives about a mile from here." Now curious, Angelo asks, "Is Mark investing in the stock market too?" Eddie replies, "Yeah. A few of these guys are." Angelo tells Eddie, "I'm really glad you told me about the stocks. It's really made a big difference in my life." Angelo's wife mentions, "Me too." Now, we can move back to Greece. "It's been really nice living here, but I'm ready for a change. I miss the old country." After a while, Angelo heads out to a hotel near the airport, where he and his family will stay overnight before their flight tomorrow. Heading inside, awaiting the 100-meter dash final, Eddie takes a seat in front of the television, wondering whether the winning time will be better than his time of 9.93 seconds that he ran earlier in the spring. This is one event Eddie certainly does not want to miss. Kathy tells Eddie, "I'm going to go outside and get everyone. Don't let them start without me." Eddie replies, "I'll call them at the stadium and let them know." Kathy comes outside to the pool and yells out to everyone, "Hey, the 100-meter dash final is on soon. Everybody, come inside." Not wanting to miss this event, everyone in the pool gets out, dries off, and heads inside. As they are walking in, Braden tells Johnson, "It don't matter who wins. They ain't beating Eddie." Quite confident in himself, Johnson replies, "They ain't beating me or you either." Johnson then asks Braden, "When is the 400-meter final?" Braden replies, "It's on July 30th, so they gave me that day off work. And I also have August 1st off, because that's when the 4x400-meter relay is. Ain't no one kicking our ass, even though we ain't gonna be there." Braden and Johnson walk inside, grabbing a slice of pizza before the race begins. Inside, there is standing room only. Sitting right in front of the television is Eddie, Mark, and Hoffa, the university's 3 100-meter dash stars. The chatter in the room rises as everyone finds a place where they can see the upcoming race. Eddie comments, "It seems like these commercials are going to drag on forever." Mark replies, "That's because they know you're watching, bro." With the televised action focusing back on the track, Braden announces, "Here it comes." Silence falls over the room as the runners walk up to the blocks. As the runners get into the blocks, Eddie whispers to Mark, "So, that's what we look like to the spectators." Mark whispers back, "Why doesn't that guy stop bouncing up and down and get behind the blocks?" The lone hyperactive runner finally gets into the blocks, joining the other finalists. Once the runners are motionless, the gun is fired. Everyone in the room watches intently as what appears to be 8 tiny action figures running down the track. The camera angle changes to get a better view of the finish line, and the runner wearing number 290 pulls ahead of the pack right at the finish. In about 10 seconds, the race is all over. Eddie comments, "Wow. That was over really fast. It seems like it goes a whole lot slower when you're on the track." Mark replies, "You got that right." The times are posted, and Eddie exclaims, "Yes. The time delivered by the gold medalist is 10.25 seconds, not quite up to par when compared with Eddie's personal best time of 9.93 seconds. Everyone in the room cheers and gives Eddie a high five. Eddie tells Mark, "You would have won the silver medal." Eddie is on top of the world that he would have won the gold medal at the Olympics, but ticked off that he was denied his chance to try. Eddie sarcastically yells out, "Thank you, Mr. President." Braden exclaims, "His flimsy ass ain't never gonna get re-elected." Everyone agrees with Braden, and all are sorely ticked off at the president's boycott of the Olympics. As the day moves on, the television programming shifts toward other events, so most of the group heads outside to the pool. Bobby B. hangs around inside, hoping to get a glimpse of the weightlifting competition. Eddie and Mark take a seat outside at the table. With no swimming events being televised at the moment, Tessa heads outside to the pool. Walking by Eddie, Tessa dives into the pool and starts swimming laps with ferocious energy that tells Eddie that he may own the world record in the 100-meter dash, but the pool is a different story. A few days later, on Wednesday, the party is at Mark and Paula's house. Brayden is particularly fired up because today is the 400-meter dash final. Everyone is aware of Brayden's world record time of 43.75 seconds, including the competitors at the games. And Bobby B will be definitely paying close attention to today's activities, which include the shot put final. With various sports competitions simultaneously underway, most track and field events are videotaped and broadcast back to back after they occurred. Inside, a few track team members watch the games. Outside, at the pool, Eddie, Mark, Brayden, and Bobby B are hanging out and cooling off, waiting for someone to announce that some track event is about to start. Eddie asks Mark, "So, how's the track over at the middle school coming along?" Mark explains, "The old track has been ripped up. The surveyor has it all marked out. Zeno said the forms will be delivered shortly. Once they are in place, the new curb can be installed. We have to get it done by the time school starts. And Bobby B has been turning it into a great workout." Not knowing exactly what Mark means by his comment, Eddie asks, "What do you mean, a great workout?" Mark explains to Eddie, he picks up the chunks of concrete and does exercises with them. Then he carries them over to the dumpster and throws them inside. He could have just as easily walked them through the back of the dumpster, since there's a door that opens. Coming to his defense, Bobby B exclaims, "Hey, it's hard work." Mark laughs and replies, "Yeah, only because you make it hard work. You could have just as easily loaded the concrete chunks into the front end loader and driven it to the dumpster. But no. You carry them one by one to the dumpster, doing curls or overhead presses with them on the way." Bobby B admits, "Okay. I'm busted. But, hey, I'm a lot better now at the shot put than I was last spring at the divisional meet." But Mark doesn't really care that Bobby B turns work into a workout. Mark does the same thing. During the conversation, Mark tells Bobby B, "By the way, I'm going to be slowing down a little once Paula starts teaching at the middle school. So, you may want to try to pick up some of your own work." Bobby B replies, "I can do that. And I need a little break myself." Brayden interjects, "Yeah, I'd say. From carrying all that concrete." It seems that Bobby B's unusual style of integrating a workout into his daily work routine is the center of today's conversation. Eddie mentions to Bobby B, "I have a job opening at the service station, if you're interested." Bobby B asks, "What's that?" Eddie explains, "It's really easy compared to Mark's back-breaking labor. The job is pumping gas, doing oil changes, rotating tires, flushing radiators, changing wiper blades, and that sort of stuff. And whoever I'm going to hire will eventually move into doing more complicated stuff. So, you'll basically be a mechanic trainee." Thinking that being a mechanic might not be a bad profession, Bobby B asks, "Seriously?" Eddie replies, "Yeah, bro. Seriously. I need someone to do the small stuff while I do the major repairs." Happy to do something that is interesting to him, Bobby B tells Eddie, "Sure. I'll give it a try." To Bobby B, the job at the service station sounds like a break compared with working for Mark. Continuing with roasting Bobby B, Brayden tells Eddie he's gonna be doing shrugs and lateral raises with your toolboxes. And if you have an axle laying around, he's going to be doing overhead presses with that. Mark tells Eddie, "And when you change a tire, he can just hold the car by the bumper for you." Eddie adds, "Or I can get him to get under the car and bench press the car off the ground." Mark turns toward Bobby B and tells him, and you thought that job was going to be easy. Over at another table, Dagmar is having a conversation with Karen, which ultimately comes around to training. Realizing Karen is the fastest woman on the team, Dagmar asks, "Are you doing something special with your training? Or, how did you get to be so fast?" Karen explains, "Last summer, I was training with Eddie, Kathy, Mark, and Paula. This summer, we're all still training together whenever we can. Erica and Tessa join us a lot." With sudden interest, Dagmar asks, "Really? Where do you train, and what do you do?" Karen explains their typical workout, which includes bicycling, using the resistance sled, swimming, weightlifting, and, of course, running. Dagmar, seeing the group that Karen trains with is top-notch, asks, "Is there any chance that I could train with you guys?" Clearly wanting to do far more than excel at track, Dagmar wants to be part of the inner circle. Karen replies, "I'm sure that would be okay. But we're sprinters, and you run distance. I'm not sure the training would be the same." Dagmar points out, "But looking at Eddie, Mark, Eric, and Axel, they are sprinters, and they all can break a 4-minute mile. There must be something you guys are doing differently." Karen tells Dagmar, "Come and join us sometime." Dagmar takes Karen up on her offer, hoping to gain an edge before next year's season begins. Paula comes out to the pool area and announces, "Hey, everyone. The 400 meter is going to start soon." Braden rushes out of the pool and drives off on his way inside, wanting a front row seat. Paula then announces, "It starts in about 10 or 15 minutes. Everyone else follows, not in quite the rush that Braden is in. Braden takes a seat in a beanbag chair right in front of the television set. Braden blurts out, "Let's get this as kicking underway. I'm not even there, and I'm gonna win." Hoffer asks, "Bro, how are you going to win if you're not there?" Braden exclaims, "I own the world record. Ain't no one on that track gonna beat me. I won this race 2 months ago. These guys are just fighting it out for the position as an ass kicker trainee." Braden appears extremely confident that his world record will stand and continues ranting as the pre-race commentary and commercials begin playing. The runners enter the track through a tunnel and quickly move into their lanes. Each runner is introduced and waves to the crowd. Braden sits back and is unusually quiet. With no further ado, the runners get into the blocks. The gun is fired, and the 400-meter dash final is underway. With all eyes glued to the television screen, no one utters a word. Braden watches intently, for once, seeing a 400-meter dash as a spectator rather than a participant. With the race now underway, Braden, unusually quiet for once, is studying what is transpiring on the television screen as if there is going to be a test afterwards. Halfway through the race, Eddie whispers to Kathy, "So, this is the world's best. They are not any better than we are." Kathy replies, "That's because our country is led by the world's worst." As the end of the race draws near, Braden's eyes are glued to the timer on the screen. The winner crosses the finish line, and the winning time is displayed next to Braden's world record. First place goes to a runner who ran 400 meters in 44.60 seconds, which is almost 1 second slower than Braden's world record of 43.75 seconds. Seeing the time, Braden stands up and screams at the television, "I'm faster than your fat ass. Get your flimsy ass off the track. Stop trying to act like you won something. I'm still the greatest ass kicker of all time." Everyone gives Braden a high five, knowing that, if he were at the event, the gold medal would have been his. And Johnson's time in the divisional meet of 44.98 seconds would have afforded him fifth place if he and Braden were both in the race. Braden grabs a slice of pizza and, seeing the event he wanted to see today, heads back outside with Wendy. Bobby B. also heads outside, telling everyone to let him know when the shot put final is about to start. Once Braden is outside, Kathy tells Eddie, "Braden sounds fired up, but he's really upset." Eddie replies, "Yeah. I know exactly how he feels." Kathy then asks Eddie, "Should I make the announcement today?" Eddie replies, "You can. But I'm still not going. I have to be at work." Kathy tells Eddie, "Okay, I'll make the announcement after the shot put final." Outside, at a table, Eddie and Braden discuss the 400-meter dash. Braden confides in Eddie, telling him, "This really sucks. That was my medal. This president ain't worth a shit." Eddie agrees, telling Braden, "Yeah. I know, bro. You work your whole life, and that asshole just wipes away all your work with his pen. He's no different than Mr. Crum or Dean Grimsby. They are all a bunch of losers." Braden then explains to Eddie, "Next year, on that track, I'm gonna mess with everyone. I'm gonna stand at the finish line, waiting for number 2 to show up. Then, right before he gets there, I'm gonna walk across that line backwards." Eddie replies, "In football, that would be a 15-yard penalty for taunting the opponent." Braden laughs and replies, "I know. But it won't matter none anyway. There ain't no penalties in track." Eddie mentions, "Unless your name is McCrutchen, and you can't take hold of a baton." Braden laughs and replies, "That's a 10-yard penalty on the track, because that's how far I shoved his ass." Eddie mentions to Braden, "For the last year or two, we've all been training really hard because of the distant possibility of making the Olympics. As we got closer, the possibility got more and more real, so we all trained even harder. Now, some of us are better than the athletes in the Olympics." Braden replies, "Yeah. You got that right." Eddie continues, "But here's a problem. What's going to motivate us as a team next year? I mean, like, Stone is really bummed out. He's probably not going to practice with the team anymore. Kathy's not going to keep up her training for 4 more years at the level she has been. And next year is our last year at the university. Then what? What's after that?" Braden replies, "I see what you mean." Sitting back and thinking, Braden suggests, "Maybe we should all try out for football again." Eddie laughs and asks Braden, "Hey, do you remember Matt Wood?" Braden replies, "Yeah. He threw the shot put when we were freshmen in high school. That guy was big." Eddie explains, "He's now sacking quarterbacks. I've watched him play. I'm not too sure I'd want to be on the other end of that." Braden mentions, "Well, we all have our jobs. I'm grateful for mine." Eddie replies, "Well, next year, all the other teams will be afraid of us. We'll be okay. We'll just kick their asses for fun, bro." With the temperature rising, Eddie and Braden join the others in the pool. Later in the afternoon, Paula goes outside and announces, "They said the shot put final is coming up soon, but they didn't say when." The pool empties out again, and it's a good thing that it's hot outside to keep everyone's towels dried off. On the way inside, Erica asks Bobby B, "Do you think someone will beat you?" Bobby B replies, "I don't know. The preliminaries were 2 days ago, and some of those guys looked really good." Erica pulls Bobby B's arm, telling him, "Come on. Let's get a good seat." Erica and Bobby B walk in, finding that the beanbag chair right in front of the television has been reserved for them. While commercials are playing, Kathy stands up and yells out to everyone, telling them, "Now that everyone is together, I have an announcement to make. Mr. Fraser, Provost Layton, and my dad are going to be at our house on Friday, August 1st, for the 4x400-meter final and the 1,500-meter final. I'm sure that Mr. Fraser would like to see everyone. So, spread the word and everyone be there. Everyone will be there anyway, but Kathy just wanted to make sure." Kathy, however, knows a bit more than what she was allowed to announce today. The shot put final gets underway, which is presented in quite a different format than the track events. The shot put event, which would normally take more than 1 hour to complete, is compressed on television down to a few minutes, where only the highlights are presented. As the event progresses, Bobby B has not yet seen a throw that has exceeded his winning throw of 21.13 meters at the Spring Divisional meet. But, saving all the excitement for the end, the network airs the winning throw last, delivered by a Soviet with a throw of 21.35 meters. The announcer boringly announces the gold, silver, and bronze medalists, and the distance that they threw the shot put. The winning throw is announced to be 21.35 meters, with the silver medalist throwing 21.08 meters, and the bronze medalist throwing 21.06 meters. In contrast to the boring television commentator, Bobby B exclaims, "I would have got the silver medal." Mark asks, "What did you throw?" Bobby B exclaims, "I threw 21.13 meters. I would have got the silver medal." Everyone congratulates Bobby B, giving him a generous supply of high fives and fist bumps. Bobby B's throw of 21.13 meters would have missed the gold medal by about 10 inches. But you never know. Were Bobby B at the Olympics, he might have found the energy to push the 16-pound steel ball just a little farther and taken the gold medal. And since Bobby B has been doing exercises while at work, he might just have taken the gold medal. Once most of the guests have left, out of the blue, Kathy tells Eddie, "Hey, Eddie, I want a Volkswagen bus." Eddie asks, "Why do you want one of those?" Kathy explains, "Well, we're going to have a family someday, and it's not like three of us are going to be driving around in my Porsche, your MGB, or my June buggy." Eddie replies, "You do have a point, but why a Volkswagen bus? You do know that a bus has, at best, 70 horsepower, don't you?" Kathy confidently asks, "Well, Mr. Mechanic, how are we going to get more horsepower?" Eddie thinks for a minute and proposes, "Maybe I can put a Porsche engine in it. Then, it might get to 60 miles an hour before the sun sets." Kathy exclaims, "You can't be serious." Eddie laughs and replies, "Sweetie, the VW bus does 0 to 60 in anywhere from 22 to 75 seconds. And that's when it's empty. If you put me, Mark, Bobby B, Braden, and Johnson in it, it won't even make it to 60 miles an hour." Now not so excited, Kathy asks Eddie, "You're serious, aren't you?" Eddie replies, "Yeah, sweetie. But I'll talk to Kurt and see if he knows how easy it is to put a Porsche engine in it." Quite confident that Eddie can put a Porsche engine in a Volkswagen bus, Kathy tells Eddie, "Okay, then. I'll start looking for a bus, and you can find me a Porsche engine." Already thinking about how to solve the problem, Eddie tells Kathy, "I suppose that, if I reinforce the engine mounting points and drop the whole 911 or 930 drivetrain in, it will work." As if the project has already been completed, Kathy exclaims, "See that? I knew you could do it. After all, you did mention once that you were looking for another project." Eddie replies, "I did say that, didn't I?" One way or another, there appears to be a Volkswagen bus in Kathy's future. The last day of the seemingly perpetual summer party is on a Friday, which is the final day for the track and field events. The two big events of the day for the university track team are the 4x400-meter relay and the 1,500-meter run. By early afternoon, most everyone on the team has arrived, but not for the events. Pizza is on the lunch menu, which no one wants to miss. And, with the weather being quite hot outside, what could be better than a relaxing afternoon in the pool? At the party today are Mr. Fraser and his wife, Dawn. Kathy's father, Dr. Karakova, and Kathy's mother are also present at the party today. Joining them is Mr. Zunday, who lives just down the street. The team's assistant coach, Provost Layton, was also invited and has graciously accepted the invitation. "Very interested in today's 1,500-meter race," Provost Layton's son, Daryl Stone, will be watching along with Mitchell and Akinmola. As Eddie and Kathy are preparing for the pizza delivery, Kathy whispers to Eddie, "My dad said something about making the announcement after the 4x400-meter relay." Eddie replies, "I'm still not going." Kathy replies, "I know. I just thought I'd tell you." Eddie asks, "Does anyone else know?" Kathy replies, "No. Just you and me." Eddie asks, "How about Paula? Does she know?" Kathy replies, "No." Eddie smiles and asks, "Really, Katerina? How in the world did you manage that?" Kathy sighs and tells Eddie, "I had to listen to my father. He told me not to tell anyone, except for you." Eddie whispers to Kathy, "Yeah. You just didn't want to get a spanking." Kathy laughs, bumps Eddie's hip, and tells him, "Yeah, right. Like that's going to happen." Bobby B. walks up to Eddie and asks, "So, when can I start working?" Eddie offered Bobby B. a job at the service station a few days ago. Apparently, Bobby B. has thought about Eddie's offer some more and wants to get started soon. Eddie explains, "Next week, I'm going to start cleaning up around the station. I should reopen about 2 weeks after that. You can start then." Eddie then informs Bobby B. some really interesting people come into the station. Confident that he can handle anything, Bobby B. asks, "Oh yeah. Who's that?" Eddie replies, "Well, Mr. Crumb used to come in until he went to jail. And, let's see. There's Jimmy O'Brien, Mr. O'Brien, the Chucky, and Mrs. Black. Oh, and Goldshit came into the station once, but I had to kick the shit out of him." Bobby B. smiles and replies, "It sounds like the good old days." Everyone has been waiting for the 4x400-meter relay, especially the acclaimed undefeated relay team of Eddie, Mark, Johnson, and Braden. Hearing the announcement on television, Kathy heads outside to inform everyone that the relay will be starting soon. Inside, Dr. Karakova, Mr. Fraser, and Provost Layton are having a private conversation off to the side. Getting a front row seat, each with a slice of pizza, is the acclaimed 4x400-meter relay team, not so patiently waiting for the event to begin. Provost Layton, seeing the athletes getting on the track, mentions, "The stands look relatively empty. There are certainly a lot of empty seats for such a prestigious event." Mr. Fraser replies, "That's because half the world isn't there." Braden interjects, "Yeah. Me included." Braden is still a bit ticked off that someone else is wearing the Olympic gold medal that he would have likely won were he participating in the 400-meter dash. As one of the runners prematurely gets into the blocks, Johnson asks, "What's wrong with that guy? Someone had to tell him what to do." Braden replies, "That's because it's his first time on the track. His ass ain't never run before." Mark comments, "Yeah. I can see that. They got the second string out on the track today. The first string is sitting right here." Braden laughs and replies, "That sounds like something I would say." After the runners are in the set position for an uncomfortably long time, the gun is finally fired. Everyone in the room is quiet as the first lap gets underway. The leader in the first lap runs at a pace that is very familiar to the university's 4x400-meter relay team. As the leaders approach the transition zone, Braden exclaims, "Those guys are fast." Eddie confidently replies, "Not as fast as we are, bro. Clearly a world-class performance. The first handoff occurred with about 45 seconds on the clock." Halfway through the second leg, Mr. Fraser comments, "Right now, it looks like a three-team race." Somewhat fired up, Braden replies, "That's because we're not there. If we were there, it would be a one-team race. Everyone else would have just shown up for their ass kicking." Seeing a less than optimal handoff, Mr. Fraser announces to the group, "Everyone, watch their handoffs. And compare it with yours." On the transition to the third leg, Mr. Fraser exclaims, "Did you see that?" He had to turn around to get the baton and lost some ground. That is exactly why we use the technique we do. And that's why you guys are so good. Now a two-team race, the field of runners has spread significantly, with the leading team on track to run a 3-minute composite time. As the transition is made to the anchor leg, Mr. Fraser exclaims, "These guys are clocking." The team in the lead would have given the acclaimed 4x400-meter relay team a run for their money. As the two front runners approach the finish line, Braden exclaims, "They ain't beating us." Still running at full speed, the front runner's time is on the screen next to the world record. The entire track team cheers, seeing the race still underway when the clock on the screen runs right by the world record of 2:56.02. Crossing the finish line with a time of 3:01.08, the team taking the gold medal is slightly more than 5 seconds slower than the university's world record holders. Braden stands up and exclaims, "We kicked their ass, and we weren't even there. They wouldn't stand a chance against us." Johnson agrees, telling Braden, "If we were out there, it would be a one-team race." High fives and congratulations are exchanged by everyone, knowing that they truly are a world-class track team. Once the energy level has dropped, Dr. Karakova announces, "Now that everyone is together, I have an announcement to make." Provost Layton asks, "Is everyone here?" Kathy replies, "Hold on. Let me check," and heads outside to check the pool area. Eddie checks downstairs, seeing if anyone is working out in the gym. Eddie and Kathy return, and Kathy announces, "It looks like we're all here." Dr. Karakova tells Kathy, "Then, I guess we can start." Silence falls over the room as Dr. Karakova walks in front of the television set and turns down the volume. With all eyes on the university's athletic director, Dr. Karakova announces, "I've known many of you since middle school, and some of you a lot longer. When Kathy was a sophomore in high school, after a track meet, many of the track team members were congregated in my backyard where they were enjoying pizza. Walking out back and seeing the group, I asked, 'So, who are my future exercise science students?' Much to my surprise, Barbara, Paula, Eric, Kathy, and a few others raised their hand and expressed interest. I never thought, at that time, that 7 years later I would be standing here making this announcement." Kathy stands in the back of the group, in their kitchen, alongside Eddie, already knowing the details of the announcement that is about to come. Now with everyone's full attention, Dr. Karakova announces, "This past spring, several members of this team were responsible for breaking 3 records in track and field. I'm sure that everyone saw that, when the 4x400-meter relay was underway, Eddie, Mark, Eric, and Axel's world record time was displayed on the television screen. These accomplishments have not gone unnoticed. The president of our country has even taken notice of the 3 world records that were broken in our spring divisional meet. He is also very well aware that the university's track team won nearly all the medals during that meet. Noting your accomplishments, the president has invited the members of the university's track team for dinner and an evening with the president at the White House." Most of the team members cheer, knowing that being invited to the White House is a great honor. Other team members, Eddie included, stand with their arms crossed, not showing quite as much excitement as one would expect. As planned, Mr. Fraser takes the floor and announces, "This is a great honor. It's not every day that someone is invited to the White House. If we accept the invitation, the date of the event is September 7th. You can discuss this among yourselves, and let me or Provost Layton know if we, as a team, will be attending." Mr. Fraser, quite aware of the animosity between some team members and the president, is giving the team a choice whether they choose to attend or not. Chatter arises among the team members, who discuss the president's invitation among themselves. From the kitchen, Eddie announces to the team, "You guys can go if you want, but I'm not going." Echoing the sentiment, Braden adds, "Me neither. I ain't going." Not unless he has a gold medal waiting for me. And I want solid gold. Making an excuse, Mark announces, I can't go anyway, because I have to get the track finished at the middle school. Bobby B. adds, well, if Mark is working, then I have to work too. With a totally valid excuse, Johnson points out, I have to be at work. That's my first week on the job at the high school. Hearing the core team members expressing their opinion, all the team members express the same sentiment. While the issue is being discussed among the team members, Eddie whispers to Kathy, if no one comes from the future to tell me to accept the invitation, how bad of a decision can it really be? Kathy replies, whispering, that's a really good point. If you're making a big mistake by not going, we would have come from the future by now to tell us to accept the invitation. Eddie whispers to Kathy, it's not like I'm about to take an antibiotic or something. Kathy bumps Eddie's hip with hers, whispering, seriously. This is not a life or death situation. And it's not like someone is going to break into our house. Considering the president's decree of boycotting the Olympics, Mr. Fraser is not surprised that the team is unexcited and nonchalant about the invitation. But he, Dr. Karakova, and Provost Layton are just the messengers. Provost Layton asks the group, am I to take it that we, as a team, are declining the president's invitation? Provost Layton unmistakably hears the team unanimously decline the president's invitation. Wanting to be sure, Provost Layton asks, by a show of hands, is there anyone who would like to accept the president's invitation? No one raises their hand, prompting the provost to announce, okay, then. That's settled. I'll go ahead and decline the invitation next week. With the announcement now history, most everyone heads out to the pool to relax while Eddie and Mark put a few steaks on the grill. Outside, at the pool, Angela gets into the water, joining Kathy, Paula, and Karen, who are discussing their childhoods. Taking the opportunity to put Angela on the spot, Kathy quickly tells Angela, it's your turn. Angela asks, my turn for what? Paula explains, we were talking about the stupid things we believed when we were kids. And it's your turn. Angela laughs and replies, where do I start? Okay, so the North Pole is at the top of the world, and it's really cold there. And since it's so cold, there's always snow at the North Pole. So, from the North Pole, the farther south you go, the warmer it gets. So, when I was a kid, I thought that the South Pole must be a really, really hot place. The other women laugh, as Kathy exclaims, hey. That seems perfectly reasonable to me. Angela continues, telling everyone, oh yeah, and when I was a kid, the Vietnam War started. I thought the war was like 30 miles away from where we lived, not halfway around the world. So, at night, I opened the window in my bedroom to see if I can hear the bombs exploding. I had no idea the world is as big as it was, and that Vietnam was all the way on the other side of the world. The women laugh, knowing that they thought equally silly things when they were younger. Karen then tells everyone, when I was in high school, someone stole a do not pass road sign and hung it in my high school math classroom. So, we all thought the teacher was trying to send us a subliminal message to make us all get lower grades. Oh, and whoever put it there, screwed it to the concrete wall, so it hung there for weeks before it got taken down. Paula laughs and exclaims, that sounds like something Mr. Crumb would do. Kathy exclaims, yeah. Seriously. Once the laughter settles down, Kathy tells Paula, it's your turn again. Paula quickly splashes Kathy, giving her a little more time to think. Kathy splashes Paula back and tells her, if you can't think of anything, I can suggest a few things. Paula splashes Kathy back and tells her, no you won't, girl. Paula goes underwater, denying Kathy the chance of splashing her back. Paula then surfaces and explains, when we were in biology class in 10th grade, the teacher said that we only use 10% of our brain. Kathy starts laughing and tells everyone, this is so good. Paula continues, explaining, "Yeah, you were there." So, I raised my hand, and the teacher asked me if I had a question. So, I asked, "If we only use 10% of our brain, what 90% of it can we cut out?" So, everyone in the class started laughing. Then, the teacher tried to explain his way out of it, and he couldn't. Kathy comments, "So, 90% of the brain is superfluous." Paula replies, "No. It's verbose." Kathy replies, "Superfluous." Continuing the verbal ping-pong match, Paula replies, "Verbose." Karen asks, "What's this all about?" Kathy replies, "Seriously, girl. You don't want to know." Knowing there is a story behind the story, Angela tells Kathy and Paula, "Yeah, we do." Paula laughs and comments, "Not this again." Kathy explains, "When we were in chemistry class in high school, on the lab handout there was a sentence that read, 'Credit will be deducted for both superfluous information and verbose detail.'" Paula comments, "Notice how she remembers that word for word." Kathy splashes Paula and continues, "So, me and Paula were discussing whether the word 'both' in that sentence is superfluous or verbose. I thought it was superfluous because the word 'both' was totally unneeded. Paula thought the extra word in there made it verbose. So, Mr. Madre, the teacher, heard us. So, we got in trouble, and Mr. Madre told us that, if we disrupt the class again, we're both going to detention." Angela laughs and asks, "So, did you ever settle it?" Kathy replies, "Yeah. It's superfluous." Paula splashes Kathy and replies, "No, it's not. It's verbose." Mr. Fraser and Braden take a walk around the pool, talking about the 4x400-meter relay, the 400-meter dash, and a few other events. During their lengthy discussion, Mr. Fraser tells Braden, "With all that you guys have been through with Mr. Crum and Dean Grimsby, you are all to be commended. Those guys put every imaginable roadblock in your way. It's nice to have no interference for once." Braden replies, "Now, all we have to do is get this guy's ass out of the White House." Mr. Fraser explains, "He's not going to be re-elected. First of all, no one in the athletic sphere will ever vote for him. And with 18% interest rates, no one who has a credit card, needs a car loan, or wants to buy a house will ever vote for him." Braden replies, "Good. Because, even if we went to the White House to meet him, I don't have anything good to say to him anyway." Braden mentions, "Speaking about Mr. Crum, he ain't doing too well." Mr. Fraser asks, "What's going on with Mr. Crum these days? Is he not enjoying his stay at the prison?" Braden replies, "He got his ass kicked really bad the other day. They had to ship his piece of shit ass off to the hospital." Mr. Fraser opens his eyes wide and asks, "Really? What did he do?" Braden explains, "Mr. Crump still thinks he's a school principal. A fight broke out, and he stepped in and tried to break it up. So, the two inmates who were fighting ganged up and kicked the shit out of him. He's trying to get brownie points for an early release." Mr. Fraser replies, "He'd be better off just laying low." Braden agrees, telling Mr. Fraser, "Yeah. My father told me that Mr. Crum is a real pain in the ass. Mr. Crum is always complaining about something." Mr. Fraser laughs and replies, "Some things never change." Off to the side, Provost Layton and Dr. Zunday, not seeing each other for a while, have a private conversation. After catching up on what they have been up to since the university's division meet, Provost Layton asks Dr. Zunday, "Gerhard, so tell me, what's your take on the boycott?" Dr. Zunday explains, "I generally like to stay politically neutral. But in this case, I simply can't. This is a serious problem." Pointing to the men and women on the track team, Dr. Zunday continues, "These guys have put in an enormous amount of work to get where they are today. I've seen it over the years. And to nullify all that work and to toss all potential Olympiads aside, like trash, is an outright disgrace. This president has also ruined his chances for re-election, not that anyone would vote for him again, anyway. And, this close to the election, since he's not going to be re-elected anyway, what's the point of his action? All it will do is to guarantee that the other party will win. Provost Layton agrees, replying, I think we all share that sentiment. Provost Layton asks, so, how are things over at the high school? Dr. Zunde replies, over this past year, everything went back to being a little rough. The interim principal, Mr. Shapiro, is becoming another Mr. Crumb. I'm sure that George has told you of his dealings with Mr. Crumb. Provost Layton replies, he has. I'm so sorry that you guys had to put up with him for so many years. Dr. Zunde mentions, I'm not sure if you know this or not, but my cousin, Noreen Brooks, is the superintendent of schools. There's a couple of changes coming along next year that will definitely work in our favor. Provost Layton replies, that's good news. Trust me. I know firsthand how annoying interference from administrators can be. Provost Layton and Dr. Zunde have quite a lengthy conversation, leaving a few members of the team wondering what they are discussing. Mr. Fraser comes over and joins in, raising more speculation of what is being discussed over in the coach's corner. Waving over to Barbara and Johnson to join them, Dr. Zunde will let them in on the confidential good news that will be announced next year. Later in the afternoon, Akinmola comes outside and announces to everyone, the 1,500 meters is going to be on soon. Mitchell asks, how soon? Akinmola replies, all they said, my friend, is that it's coming up. Everyone gets out of the pool, dries off, and heads inside. All eyes are focused on the television as the 1,500 meter final is about to get underway. Seeing the athletes walking out on the track, Mitchell comments, where's their muscle? Braden replies, they ain't got none. That's half their problem. Akinmola comments, they are anemic. Karen, Kathy, and Paula suddenly laugh hysterically, prompting Akinmola to ask, did I say something funny? Paula tells Akinmola, we'll explain later, after the race. The runners are at the starting line, some of them bouncing up and down as if they were on a trampoline. Others appear as if they are dancing out of step to the sound of the background noise in the stadium. With a sudden burst of energy, they all rush to the starting line, awaiting the gun. The gun is fired, and the runners have left in what appears to be a fast-paced jog. Braden asks, when are they gonna start running? Mitchell replies, hopefully, sometime before the closing ceremony. During the first lap, Davidson comments, if they were any closer, they could hug each other. Mitchell mentions, they are all chicken shit. They are all afraid to do anything. Hearing the comments, Mr. Fraser announces, do you see this? This is exactly why I always say that there are only two races run in track. The 100 meter dash and the 400 meter dash. What you are watching is a 400 meter dash with an 1,100 meter warm-up. And you can't tell me that those guys are giving it their best. They are not. Finally, 2 minutes into the race, one runner steps up the pace. The other runners quickly follow suit. The field begins to spread and, as Mr. Fraser previously announced, the last 400 meters is a sprint to the finish. Running in single file, everyone wonders whether any of the athletes will make a move. Coming around the final curve, the three front runners battle it out for the gold medal. Out of the curve, it is now a two-man race, which quickly turns into a one-man race. With the winning time of 3:38.40 displayed on the television, Mitchell gives Akinmola a high five. Mitchell's best performance of 3:34.23 would have won the gold medal, and Akinmola's best performance of 3:37.93 would have likely taken the silver medal. But, had Daryl Stone been in the race, it's not likely today's Olympic gold medalist would have been in the running. Mitchell, Akinmola, and Stone would have strategically blocked their opponents and swept the event as they've done many times in the past. Standing in the back of the room, Mr. Fraser whispers to Provost Layton and Dr. Karakova, "These guys deserve a whole lot better than a dinner at the White House. I wish I could do something for them, but nothing I do could even come close to them being on that track right now." Provost Layton replies, "I know what you mean, George. They are all fired up because they could have won. But that doesn't hold a candle to actually winning." Dr. Karakova mentions, "Just between us, Eddie is really ticked off. I'm sure the rest of them feel the same way. They are just not showing it." Now that the events are coming to a close, everyone heads outside to the pool to relax for a while. Tessa jumps in, getting in a few laps. Kathy mentions to Paula, "Wow. We've had a 2-week party, watching the Olympics, here and at your house. I've totally forgotten about our reunion at the county pool." Paula suggests, "If we're going to do that, we'd better set the date now since everyone's all together." With only a short time left before school starts, Kathy and Paula set a date and are glad that everyone is able to attend. As the evening comes to an end, everyone heads home and will meet again at the county pool.